Hi, I'm Lonnie, co-director of the Canadian Criminal Justice Academy, and I'm here to share with you the podcast where we talk about everything policing and corrections. We'll be sharing with you happenings around the college and important trends in justice education, our upcoming events, and team experiences from our justice partners and you folks who are different and want to make this informative and fun for you.
All right. So I got this great conversation happening with Jenny. We're talking about the Canadian Criminal Justice Academy, and I want to make sure that that this podcast ends up being a conversation, not a jargony, stand on a soapbox kind of a conversation piece around that. And but I want to bring all of our greatness to the World Wide Web or wherever this is going to go, and I want to have some fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Okay? Yes, let's cool. do it.
All right.
I'm ready.
Cool. So Jenny's just a little bit of back on the backstory on that. Jenny's our social media gal, and we love her. She's awesome at what she does at Verdzilla. And she's kind of taken CCJA through the different realms, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Different realms of kind of the beginning, middle, and,
yeah.
and as we get to a new opportunity.
Yeah, and like launching it. I really feel like I tried to make sure that, you know, we can just get started.
No, you didn't try. You did.
I did. Yes,
yeah, actually,
I did.
You did.
I did.
Really, you
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
And Yoda would say, I mean, there is no try there. It's, I mean, there is no try. It's we do or we don't do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I really try to make sure, like, the first and foremost, like, I also do web design. And to have a website is just one of the most important things before even social media. And, you know, being such a privilege to make a website that you're able to speak on what you do and have what you offer.
Right.
And it's just really, really inspiring. I think it's inspiring to others too, to know that you had a dream and to be able to help you launch it. It was just fantastic.
Well, and I never understood the kind of the real value of what a website does, but you cannot. I mean, we cannot, it couldn't function without a website. Mm-hmm. It couldn't function without you and doing our social media and how important that all is. That's your public face for better or worse. And I think you've represented us really well and you got us into the next century. So cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was great. And I'm glad we like start off, we launched and we got into fitness testing. I think that really kicked CCJA off and they gave us a lot of content to use, a lot of things that we were able to utilize. And then also to put CCJA on, you know, the platform too.
Yep. I mean, we're getting close to a couple thousand fitness tests just in the fitness testing alone. Mm-hmm. And that's just one tab on that top of that on our website, as you know. And I mean, I really want to highlight the academics. The real vision for CCJA was the academics and the diploma that we've built. Peter and myself have brainchilded this, and with your help, I mean, you've been really instrumental in getting us out there.
Yeah.
So
it's been great. Do you want to kind of let everyone know what is CCJA?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So I think the Canadian Criminal Justice Academy, or the Academy as I refer to it, is just this really amazing educational experience based on a whole bunch of things, based on our Peter's and my policing experience, my connection to the much bigger world, the requirements for education, because we are accredited, we still have to get this information through, and of course our network of all the people that we know. I mean, not necessarily have all the answers, but I sure do know people who have the answers. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's really important that we bring the whole world into this celebration and to this education. And it becomes an experience. I do not want to, no, I want to share what I want. I want to have a institution where people know that when the minute they walk in, that this is different, that this is going to be something incredible. And upon graduation, agencies are lined up out the door waiting for them to graduate. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I want. I want to make sure that the message is loud and clear, that even to our recruiters, whether you're with Calgary or Edmonton or the RCMP or corrections, I just want to make sure that don't touch them until they're ready to graduate. That's all I ask.
I think that there's a lot that sets CCJ apart. One of the reasons that really attracted me to you, Lonnie, and to the academy is that it's different. I think that when I work with my clients, I usually love to work with someone who's super passionate about something, and then that's something that's different as well. So having to meet you and then having to learn about, you know, your goals for the Justice Academy, I think that was just so different. And I was like, no one else is doing this, and right. no one else is going to do it better.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting point that you made, doing it better. I mean, for me to say we're going to be the best in the world, I think that's, I'm not sure if that's within our scope.
I think it is.
However, I mean, I'm prepared to try anything and to try and to provide this experience to bring all these great young people and older people too along for this incredible ride and to do my very, very best.
Yeah.
And if that means it's the best, so be it. But I want to make sure the litmus test, I think, will be, and mark my words, 2 years from now, when we get to close to our first graduation, which will be in, let's see here, it'll be in May of 2026. Yes, it will be. When we get close to graduation and we have people who actually, I mean, I'm getting choked up even talking about it, but who are getting teared up, getting ready for graduation. Yeah, right?
It's going to be so exciting.
I think it's going to be an incredible opportunity. And for, because I do not want to have them leaving with cheers. Yes, there's going to be lots of celebration, but the whole impact is going to be, the impact that we're going to have on them, that they know they're going to a great place and that they're leaving the familiarity of an educational institution, but to be able to do that with commitment and support, and that they know that they can come back, get advice. I'm not sure where I want to go, or I'm not exactly sure. Maybe there's a bit of a crisis going on in their new workplace that they need to bounce it off of. Well, we're there for them. That this is a long-term lifelong. This is not lifelong learning. This is lifelong lifestyles.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a relationship with them for a very, very long time. So
Yeah. That'd be great.
Until I die.
Right. Until you die.
Until I die.
Let's just start off with maybe a few questions that I have for you.
Sure.
A little bit about you. You've obviously been in the force. You've done so much throughout your life. Do you want maybe just touch base a little bit on that before we get into the questions and what you've done?
Okay, cool. And thanks for that. And so if you've seen any of, I mean, if you've seen any of the previous TikToks we've had, Jenny and I, we actually started off in very far east of Forest Lawn in my old stomping grounds of red carpet trailer court. That's where I grew up, and all over the city of Calgary. But I had an opportunity at a very young age to get on with the police service in Saskatchewan, Weyburn Police Service, actually, at 19, at the rosy age of 19. And I didn't look back. I just knew that, I think at the age of about 12 is when I knew I wanted to be a police officer. And by virtue of some of the challenges around my family life, we had the police in our home every now and then. And so I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I got into the Sea Cadet program. Well, Navy League had actually started, got into the Sea Cadet program. I just knew that I needed to serve my community and my country. And so, of course, along with that, I joined the Army Reserve. I decided that policing was for me, and I transitioned at 19, as I said. I went out to Saskatchewan, back to where my family was raised. My mom and dad were both born out there. And I got on with Weyburn Police Service at 19. And so I went from almost right out of high school into this world of...
Wow.
Yeah, it was really wow. But not shockingly well. And I had great leadership. My field training officer, Mike Rogel, was incredible. My sergeant was making sure that, and thank goodness I had great leadership, because I don't think it would have worked out well enough for me if I had leadership that wasn't paying attention to me. And, and so in my, in those 20s, my, in my 20 year old's days, I policed in Saskatchewan and we did everything. I was, I mean, I could do as much as, or as little, well, I couldn't do as little as I want, but I mean, the enforcement side was important. Drugs and surveillance and, and of course speeding and seatbelt tickets and stuff like that. But we also knew that, I mean, there's times of the year where, well, hang on a sec, guys, it's harvest time. And these farmers are coming in and out of Weyburn and making sure that they're getting their crops to, so let's just ease up on them a little bit and being, and exercise our discretion. And I mean, I also had, I was living in a town, I was policing in a town that, that had, I had my large group of my family were in. So that reputation meant also the dance around that was making sure that I was using my skills and abilities and I mean, my grandmother knew when I was out and about, so she was paying attention to what I was up to in my career as well. And, but I mean, it, there was a shelf life to that because I was ready for a much bigger picture. And being a sworn police officer in Saskatchewan got my, I mean, it got all the really interesting pieces to all of this and what I wanted in a career. But I ended up applying for Edmonton Police Service. And at 26 years old, and I'd been in policing in Weyburn for 7 years by then, I went to Edmonton and I started brand new right out of recruit training again. So I spent the next number of years until retirement with Edmonton Police Service. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I never looked back. And to a point where when I graduated, when I retired, I was hanging on to the doorways, but I knew that there was some, there was a big world out there for me.
Right.
And I got to be an educator then. So, yeah.
And then what made you, what else did you do after you retired? Were
Did
you feel like you didn't know what you wanted to do at that point, or you had a goal in, sight?
I, at my 20th year of service, I went, I actually applied for a position, which I thought I was a shoo-in. In fact, the HR manager thought, you're in. And it was a really highfalutin, really incredible opportunity in the, in the, in the firearms world, in policing, law enforcement firearms. And as it turned out, I didn't even get an interview because I didn't have an education. So I went back to school at 40 years old. And I just, I had an inspector tell me that in order for you to get anywhere, Lonnie, after your retirement, you have to have an education. So I went back to school for the next number of years and I got a teaching credential in out of University of Alberta. And then I went to Royal Roads University and got my master's in leadership. So I really got to understand leadership and what it means to care about people. But I just knew I needed an education. So I went and got my, degree, my master's degree. And upon, I mean, upon graduation from Royal Roads, the whole world opened up. So now I had opportunities overseas in the Middle East and Qatar. And so I, which was going to be a 1 year opportunity, and I took my family out to the Middle East. In fact, I remember it was February and I, where the recruiting session was and in Edmonton. And I remember parking my police car and it was huge snow drifts and it was crazy. And it was winter and I minus 40. I remember phoning my, my spouse and asking where in, where on the globe, we had a globe, and where on the globe is Qatar? Because I had never heard of the country before, but that's where we're moving to. And, yeah, it was fantastic. And, so that was in February and I actually retired on, the 12th of August. And on the 20th of August, my family,
you have to move everything. Did you guys sell everything or?
We did.
Wow. Sold everything. We're like, we're going to Qatar.
We had a garage sale. It was supposed to be a 3-day garage sale. And the first day there was a woman asked me if I was interested in selling it for 25 cents, not 50 cents. I actually just closed the garage door. Loaded everything up onto into my truck and took it to Valley Village. Everything.
Wow.
I think 12 or 13 truckloads of stuff.
Holy shit.
Yeah, holy shit is right.
You guys just up. And so, how young were your kids when you moved?
So Quinn, my youngest, was 6 years old, and my oldest was 8.
Oh.
So they had all their formative years, all their mm-hmm. elementary and some of their junior high years was in a Dutch school learning Arabic and Dutch and having kind of the time of their lives.
Yeah. It sounds so fun.
It was really, really fun. And I mean, it was bougie and exciting. I mean, where else do you go where your kid's field trip is going to be in the Straits of Oman or in Hormuz, or they're going to go to Turkey, or they're going to go to Egypt?
Definitely not in Alberta. Definitely not in Alberta.
Maybe online, I guess.
Yeah, but
no, this is the lifestyle that they had.
Yeah.
And then we moved home and mm-hmm. back to Calgary. And I mean, this is before I actually left Qatar. This was my dream, is to start this academic institution.
Right. And how long were you in Qatar for?
7 years.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It was seven really fast years because mm-hmm. we had so much fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
When you said you were only going to go there for a year, what made you continue? Just because you guys were having so much fun.
Yeah,
it was like a new place. It was fun.
And I mean,
so much
they
more
were
exciting.
Yeah, they were. There were long days, but really short weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I thought I understood what Islam was about. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I worked with folks from all over the world: Filipinos and South Africans and Nigerians and lots of Canadians, lots of Newfies from Newfoundland, because it was a Newfoundland college.
Right.
Americans, Germans, Australians, and I got another credential. I got another teaching parchment there, but this is where I really understood what it was like to be an educator mm-hmm. in a real educational institution, and at the college. And so, I mean, these young people were, of course, all mostly Arab and mostly Muslim, mm-hmm. and yet had the same values, the same interests, the same needs.
Same drive.
Same challenges as our kids do here in Canada. And I think that's what made it so exciting, is because while they look different and maybe acted a little bit different, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. They just want to have a great valued experience, and mm-hmm. and I really appreciated it. And I think it allowed me to be it took me from being an okay teacher, maybe even a mediocre teacher, to what I think it was a great opportunity to me to expand my vision of what education actually is. And,
right.
And that's why tears are so, so important.
Mm-hmm.
And not tears of sorrow, but tears of joy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Look at that journey.
Yeah. And it's not over yet.
Yeah. We just started. We're just getting started.
We are just getting started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go through some questions then. I know that. So here are some questions I actually have for you.
Sure.
And maybe this will inspire others as well. So just want to know, what inspires you to do what you do regarding the academy, regarding the education?
Mm. Yeah, a good question. Years ago, I remember an instructor. He was actually with the Special Air Services, and he was my instructor on this weapon system that he was teaching us. He says, "Don't be that guy at the back of the range barking and yelling orders and how many rounds to shoot downrange. And don't be that guy. Be the guy that's going to get inside their heads, figure out what's actually going on, all the pluses and minuses, all the negativity that's going on, or all the I can'ts, and turn that around." And I mean, that was the start of all this. He was a really really big influence on me. Although I only spent a week with him in this particular course, it was the first time that anybody actually, I think, my instructors in my policing world actually got inside my head really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that as I'm standing in front of a class, getting ready for the day. In the classroom, I'm thinking, is that, you know, who am I being by being small, and how am I serving these great students, by reading from a textbook or barking orders at them or mm-hmm. or putting them in columns and rows? I mean, I'm going to go back to in fact, not that long ago, I was going through old report cards from school.
Oh.
And one of the fantastic quotes was, if Lonnie spent more time studying and getting to his work, he'd he'd do better in class rather than socializing. And, but for me, I mean, what makes us different already is there is no columns and rows of desks in our academic institution in the college. We're going to have, we have round tables. Mm-hmm. This is a social environment. There is going to be laughter. There is going to be some seriousness. There's going to be, holy mackerel, what was that all about?
Right.
Because, I mean, to be able to bridge what's actually going on to real world has to happen in the classroom. And yeah. that's what I missed in some other colleges, is that there was no connection with what was going on out there, mm-hmm. just across the street, to real world. And I think this is the jaded piece around the seasoned cops out there, is that forget everything you learned at the college, forget everything you learned in recruit training, we're going to here to teach you the real world.
Yes.
I want that in class.
Yeah.
So and I want starts. That. I want that. And it has to start in class.
Yeah.
So that they're realizing, okay, there is a big real world out there. And that's why we've developed and mm-hmm. that, and that's why we've hired, I wouldn't say, I'm not out there pounding my chest saying we've hired the best, but I want the ones that are going to really care about them, two, support them, and three, provide the very best educational opportunity that they've got. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, that did. That did. And it, sure? I think it really goes into also like what makes CCJA different, you know? We're not sitting.
I'm going to ask you a question. Is, I mean, from where you're standing, not on the outside, but certainly on the inside, but from where you're standing, what makes us different?
The fact that you guys, I know this sounds a little bit crazy, but you move differently. The way you teach is different. And you understand that teaching education is not linear, it's not a straight line. So even just starting with the little things, like knowing that what they'll learn, how they'll learn is going to be different.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've obviously been to college and sat, you know, rows and of desks and just listening. But I just know that when you guys are teaching, it's going to be different.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you sparked a thought, and I'm going to kind of jump on that a little bit, is that I can't. Because I have to understand who my audience is. I mean, one of the first things in marketing is understanding your audience.
Yeah.
And for me as an educator, I need to understand my audience. And this is why on Sunday night before a class starts, I always get a good 8 hour sleep. Why? Because I understand who they are, or I'm going to learn. And so there's a really cool, I'd say, philosophy, because I don't think there's science around it as much as there could be. But it's, what kind of a learner are you? I read an article years ago, which was, I wouldn't say it was on one butt cheek on my desk or reading this thing. But it talked about, the title was, why are you playing with a one string guitar? Or why are you teaching with a one string guitar? And
thank you.
Yeah. And so we learn in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And those classes, depending on their moods, maybe there was an incident the day before, or maybe there was a significant news event or some family stuff going on at home.
Yeah.
I just don't know how they're showing up, but I need to know that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we need to just put the curriculum away, put the textbooks away, and actually get inside their heads to find out what's actually going on, mm-hmm. and relay that, put that back to the objectives. So are you a spatial learner? Are you a music rhythmic learner? Are you a introverted learner? Are you an extroverted learner? Do you love journaling? Or maybe journaling is something that you need to learn.
Yeah.
Are you team? Mm-hmm. Are you body kinesthetic? Do you like the feel of a firearm going off or a pen as you're journaling and stuff like that? So
like that alone just goes to show you that you care, and I think that's different from other institutions.
Mm.
Because that alone, you understanding that everybody learns differently is so different.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? Like when I grew up, I was like, had a learning disability, but really it was just, I didn't know English very well. So that type of, I get it. It was long ago and they don't understand as they do now, you know, how people differently learn. But for years upon years upon years, we're still doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Every curriculum is A, B, C, D.
Sure.
So,
well, I'll challenge you. So, you brought 2 points there. Is that I even recently had a question. Well, I have slight autism. I'm on the spectrum a little bit. And that's a learning style. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's manageable, if you can work through it, if you're with your counseling and some of the therapy, I mean, absolutely, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And because we haven't figured out, teachers haven't figured out a way of getting through to them yet. And you called it a learning disability, but you're actually smarter than most of us because you know two languages.
Yeah.
Or you probably learned. One of the examples, I remember in Qatar, one of my students was talking about, he's not as smart as I am, me being the teacher, mm-hmm. Mr. Teacher, they used to call us that. And I'm not as smart as you. So, well, hang on a second. Whoa, hang on a second. How many languages can you speak? I mean, I speak five. This guy was from India. You can speak five languages. I said, well, how did you get to Qatar? He goes, well, I had to do this, this, and this. And I was a banker, and then I was in security, and then I got into the military, and so on and so forth. I said, okay, you've actually smarter than me by a long shot because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know so much more than I do.
Yeah.
I only know what I know. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And so, I mean, it's not that you had a learning disability. We have, as teachers, the all-knowing in the classroom haven't figured out a way of getting to you. So my challenge to my faculty, and we're not teaching in isolation, by the way, at CCJ, it's very much a team approach. So give me the same information, but give it to me differently so that the music rhythmic learner will, or the body kinesthetic learner will, or the introspective mm-hmm. learner will know better. And so if there's a teacher sitting there going, geez, I wonder if I'm getting through, probably not. And so provide that same information, but give it to me differently so I'll understand.
Yeah.
And they can't understand unless they know them.
Yeah. That's right. And it's difficult. And the fact that our diploma only has 24 that are in a class?
Maximum.
That is a big difference. Because when you're going to, say, university or, you know, even some of the college classes, like, you're packed in a room.
Yeah.
If not more than 30, if not 100.
Well, I had 100 and I think it was 129 because that was how many seats in the theater mm-hmm. for a criminal law exam or for criminal law course that I taught. I was like, I can't even get to know you. And the great thing around small classrooms is an opportunity for you to certainly get more face-to-face time with each of them mm-hmm. and to be able to answer questions.
Right.
Because if one of them in those big rooms, nobody wants to answer a question. In fact, in those big classrooms, they fill up the back of the room first. Well, how cool would it be, CCJA, I'm hoping, but how cool would it be to fill up the first of those tables first? Like if you're going to a concert. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So shouldn't this be like a concert? Shouldn't going to school every day going, I can't wait to go to school. Yeah. This is going to be so great. I'm going to learn so much. What if we approached education as, I mean, this is not a podcast on education, but it's turning into it. But how would we approach education as a rock concert? Or, I mean, Bryan Adams or Phil Collins or U2 is playing. Who wouldn't be at the front of the classroom?
Yeah. 100%. And you never feel like that. When you wake up and go to school, you never feel like, I cannot wait. Because it's not that feeling. It is.
Until you got the crazy ones like Lonnie showing up where I've turned the back of the classroom to the front of the classroom.
Yeah.
Where they show up and they fill up the back seats first.
Yeah.
And that's why I turned the whole classroom upside down. And now the back of the classroom is the front of the classroom. Mm-hmm. So they can't escape me. And not that I'm trying to chase them away, but I'm working really hard, and I hope our faculty as well. Well, I expect it that our faculty is going to work really hard to be U2, Madonna,
engaging.
Lady Gaga,
you
know, engaging and get them into the front of the classroom mm-hmm. so that their feet are under the desk like they're in a starting block on a track race. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to get started.
Yeah.
I can't wait to finish I can't wait to figure out new stuff. And I don't think that's pie in the sky. Mm-mm. I really don't. And I mean, I go back to, who was your favorite teacher in school growing up? Who believed in Jenny 100%?
Not a lot, to be honest. There was not a lot.
Was there one?
There wasn't maybe a teacher, but a class that really changed my life.
Oh.
It was a women's studies class in Mont Royal.
Wow.
And I didn't know anything about women's studies. No idea, living in a Delu land. And someone had said, women's studies class was super easy. I said, great. I need credits. I'm going to take this class. So I take it, I go in, and it changed my whole entire perspective of being a woman. I felt like I was living under a rock, not knowing anything about how women are treated here or around the world. And thinking that we have equal rights, equal pay,
yeah,
everything was equal. But to learn that actually that's not true. Not only here, but obviously around the world, women don't have equal pay, but women still don't have equal pay.
No, they don't.
Equal rights are still not a thing.
Can you name her? Do you remember her name?
I don't remember her name, but it was the best class ever. And it was the only class I think I really, really was looking forward to.
That's cool.
It really, really changed my life. Yeah.
Well, I mean, when I talk about women's studies, I was raised by women. Mostly, I want to write a book one day called My Four Aunties, and my grandmothers, both my grandmothers as well, because really they spent a lot of time. You're right. Mm-hmm. We're still struggling to figure out where women are in our world in this so-called man's world. And this is where I love to see Calgary Police and Edmonton Police and the RCMP and Corrections. I mean, Canadian Border Services. They're all recruiting great women and great men too, but and the diversity and the inclusion, I celebrate it. When it comes right back down to it, how prepared are you for this career? What can I do at CCJ to prepare our young women for this incredible journey?
And I think not only preparing young women but preparing young men. I think that in the women's studies class I had taken, a gal was chased by a man and had called the police, and they had shown up and said, well, you're wearing that.
Wow.
So when you said that you were going to make a change in how we teach these young adults to go into these fields, this is where it can start. You know,
absolutely.
If it doesn't start with, you know, parents and society and all that, this is where it can start. This is where we can have that conversation about that's inappropriate to say these things when you are approaching a call.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, and that just speaks to the much bigger picture, is that how prepared are you upon graduation? How prepared are you for a career where you know how to treat each other?
Yeah.
I mean, it goes both ways. Holding a door for somebody is nothing. Mm-hmm. Standing up when someone's coming to your table, shaking hands, how to wear clothes. Yes, we do have a dress code at CCJ. Business casual means no jeans. And I'd love to have uniforms, but we're not there yet. But you know, the style, you know, when our grandparents were growing up, they wore hats, and my grandmas all wore head coverings, and they wore suits to go shopping. And I think it's coming back to that. I really think style. I really think great leadership, how we're raising our children, how we're raising our families, how we are with others around us, including women, and our diverse populations. And I think it's coming back. I really do. I believe that, and I think CCJ has a piece of that. No time in my career I can think of where my college prepared me for how to eat at a state meal or at a mess dinner, or how to greet people, how to respond to a rather scathing email. I mean, that's what we're going to get. And we have a communications course that is going to push you down that road. And we're super excited about it. Thanks for sharing. My favorite teacher was Carol Marcotte. Lonnie could do no wrong. She was my grade 12. She was a grade 12 teacher, and I really wanted to make sure that I honored her and in moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and she's still great. Yeah, I love it. I love it. What do you got?
A few more questions. Let's see. So how do you de-stress? And not only just now, but say when you were in the force or when you were teaching at Qatar, like what?
Oh, right. So, and I was talking with our host here not that long ago and talking about PTSD and and the whole assumption that, well, if you're in policing or EMS or fire, you're going to get PTSD. I think the way it was explained to me and that the whole de-stressing piece, I think that I've got anti-PTSD. I mean, I don't know if there's, that's even a term. So I had a psychologist ask me, tell me about a time, a rather difficult time at work that you had and how did you respond to it? And so I shared her this story and I was so excited and so energized by this negativity. She said, you've got anti-PTSD. You got the opposite. She goes, so people describe these events in the negative fives.
Right.
You're describing all the positive fives. And so, but I went through my entire career. I know. I mean, I suppose some of my partners would have a different opinion. Well, they will have a different opinion, but I loved every minute of it. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Mm.
And I couldn't wait to get to work. I couldn't wait to get home to tell my significant other and my babies just how much fun I had that day, which caused a bunch of tension at home too, because I enjoyed what I did every minute. Wow. And so, and what I did, I mean, I just, I had hobbies and activities and things that I used to love doing and still do, fishing and hanging out with my boys and listening to their stories and being a great dad for them and being a great a significant other to my gal at home and how important all those things are for me. And, just surrounding myself with not only great people, but activities and stuff that, I mean, going to church and, I love driving my Mini Cooper and, I love coming to work and hanging out with Peter and,
and
working on the college stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of effort working on college stuff.
It is.
On the admin side. And well, as you know, your social media and us as well. But this gets me up every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to see those pair of feet getting on the side of the bed, getting out of bed, coming to work and loving it.
Passion.
Yeah.
Passion is what distresses you.
For sure.
I find that too.
Yeah. Someone told me a long time ago that if you treat work like a hobby, you actually never work again.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that for sure.
Yeah. If you do what you love.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I know you do too.
Yeah. Like when I wake up, I just want to hit the ground running.
Yep.
Every day. I'm ready.
Yep.
Yeah. It feels great. And it's not, there's obviously stress and everything that comes with it, but
100%.
There's that passion behind it. And I think to really see the success behind it. I mean, from going to just having a small conversation with you in a coffee shop about what you're passionate about and how you want to get started to here we are with a full-fledged academy.
Yeah, we do. We have the academy like, going.
That's insane.
I mean, right. And I mean, and I've been doing this a long time. And I just think it's only going to get better.
Yeah.
And when we start having our first students and our first graduates and to be able to keep those doors open and anybody's welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be great. Yeah. What else you got?
All right. So.
Oh, and I want to add on the de-stressing. I love journaling.
Yes.
And in fact, journaling is a really great way of self-coaching. I didn't always understand it. In fact, my personality and my learning style doesn't support journaling. I had to learn it. And like driving, like shooting, like any cognitive skill, it just takes experience and takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back at my first journals and stuff like that, it was like nothing more than a diary. Well, little princesses write diaries. a journal is different. A journal is a self-coaching method. Mm-hmm. It's a leadership. It's a life lessons. It's a aha moments.
Right.
Or here we go again moments. Why am I repeating this behavior again? Why am I doing this again? Why am I? And my journaling provides that. Some go to counseling. Some go to coaching. Some go to therapy. My journals are a gift.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do to settle myself down. And and sometimes I get it figured out, and sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
But that's what journaling does for me. I would say it's probably my number one thing.
To de-stress. Yeah. I think we should definitely do an episode on journaling.
That'd be fun.
You know, I know you have a passion for that, so that'd be great to share with our audience and have them, you know, see if that helps them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I enjoy shooting. I enjoy fishing. You know, I get out there and competing.
Yeah.
But journaling is one of my things. It's my thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. So if you had a life motto, what would it be?
Oh, so it's not my own, but I love it. And Gladiator, remember seeing the movie Gladiator with Russell Crowe?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember his name. Marcus Aurelius. And a Roman, I think he was the commander of the armies of the north. And he came up with a saying or a motto saying, what you do in life echoes in eternity. And so that really, I want to take you back to that, really to that range instructor that I was telling you about, get inside their heads. But what you do in life echoes in eternity. But that range instructor, his name was Phil Singleton. He said, through your students, through your trainees, you're going to live forever, good and bad. I mean, if you provide them with a bad habit, if they see you doing something on the range or in the classroom, whatever, and they take that habit and they take it to another level, that's also your morality.
Right.
And so, but if you get, I mean, if you give them 99% of all good stuff, through them, you're going to live forever because they're going to pass it on to their trainee. They're going to turn it on to their trainee. And I mean, 20, 30 years later, I'm getting emails and phone calls from past recruits that I had with the Edmonton Police Service thanking me. And now they're trainers.
Yeah.
So a little bit of me gets to go on to the next generation. Right. So, I mean, that's my success. I think I've done a good job here. Mm-hmm. And I only want more.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have more to offer, and that's for sure. I mean, this is, you all? Know, the driving.
Don't we all?
For the academy.
Right.
Mine is, if there is a will, there is a way. If there is a will, there is a way.
That's cool.
I think that I'm a big dreamer. And also that I feel like in this world of, you know, as a woman, sometimes you get doubted a lot. So to me, if there is a will, there is a way. So if you're chasing something, if there is a will, there is a way. Yeah. You'll find a way no matter what.
So does that push you to creative problem solving, you think, or creative ways of?
I think that it's a lot of self-doubt that I have have.
Right.
Especially feeling like I'm always having to be little. Or maybe because I am little too. So I think that's just my way to cope with self-doubt and not feeling like my dreams are impossible. I think even just starting Wordzilla, I had people being like, do people even want that service?
Right.
Or you know, are you sure like that you're going to even be successful?
Can I give you the Janus of that?
Mm-hmm.
So two things come to that. One was, anytime that someone says, oh, that's a really great idea, I always think, okay, what am I missing? When someone says that's a really great idea, the flags are already coming out for me going, And then the other thing with that is the haters and the doubters.
Yeah.
So if there's an idea that I've come up with or that I've heard and kind of fostered it and crystallized it a bit, if there's an idea and it's still with me 2-3 weeks later, it's worth going after.
Yeah.
And it's every time that I've kind of forced hey, that's a really great idea, but I've forced that action.
Yes.
It's always come back to bite me in the rear end for some reason, that bad karma. And I don't, so after about a week or two, mm-hmm. maybe three, and if it's still a really great idea, I'm going after it.
Right.
Because I've really allowed it to kind of settle in and sleep on it a bit.
Yeah.
But, and for the doubters and the haters out there, they're the ones that are two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, pickles, cheese, and a sesame seed bun. I'm sorry, but that mentality doesn't go far.
No, it doesn't.
And they're the ones that are doubting themselves.
Yeah.
And it's almost cliche, but.
Yeah, it's very weird. And I think when I started Wordzilla, I was still young. I think I was like 25, 25 or something like that. I was quite young still.
Yeah.
And everybody was just kind of like, oh, is that even a thing? Or, you know, so, but I was like,
it's a thing.
Watch me.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I mean, having that public face for CCJ, for the Academy, mm-hmm. and you're the vehicle for that. And without that, we wouldn't have it, for sure.
For sure. Yeah.
I love it. I love
Unfortunately
it.
Not.
It's perfect. It's perfect. And so, yeah.
How about we go into a fun story? Do you have like, I know you were on the force, you know, the guitar, like what's like a fun story? Okay. People love hearing something.
Okay. There's a couple that are really, well, one's really funny. And I was in patrol. And so it was a beautiful Sunday evening, West Edmonton. I mean, we get into a residential neighborhood and we're going to a dog barking call. Okay. And the dog had been barking all day, a big dog. And so we park at the house where the complainant lived, where the caller to the police lived, and said, yeah, it's my backdoor neighbor. The dog's barking. It's been out there all day. I'm sure it's not getting any water. Would you mind going dealing with it? Sure. So we go through the yard. Whoops. We go through the yard, and it was a really high fence. My partner, and his name was Peter as well, and I'll protect his last name because this is amazing. So Peter and I are looking through the boards, and it was a massive big dog. It was like a bull mastiff, pit bull, Great Dane,
this
horse. And so it had a massive chain around its neck, but it was friendly. Stick my fingers through the fence and, you know, it is licking it up and stuff like that. But so we get into the backyard. I said, okay, Peter, you distract him. I'm going to go to the back door and see if somebody's home, because I didn't want to drive all the way around the block.
Right.
So I'm ringing the doorbell, and Peter's trying to settle this dog down. And as he's doing that, this dog is going around and around Peter. And the chain is also going around Peter as well. So the dog sees me at the back door, and he is in his full sprint for me, which cinched up the chain. Peter's legs are now locked in this chain. He falls. The dog looks back and sees Peter on the ground, on the grass. And, of course, the dog is all over him now.
Yeah.
And he's yelling at me, get this damn dog off me. The neighbors were watching.
Oh.
I was killing myself laughing. And this dog, I mean, it wasn't dry humping him.
No, but it was licking
his. It was something. That's so unbelievable. Funny. It was hilarious.
And you're like,
I let him sit there for a good minute.
As you should.
And this was before cell phones and stuff like that. But that was a fantastic day. I mean, I would say the majority of the fun stories in my career are all based around my team, my partner. Mm-hmm. And when we get together, we go right back to those days.
Yeah.
And how much fun we had, and how amazing experience we provided this service. I mean, pushing people's cars out of the middle of the intersection at 3 a.m. in the winter time, and just how appreciative people were, and mm-hmm. knowing that they get a block away, those effing cops, and you know, next time they get a speeding. This is the reality, and those fun stories, and there's millions of them. I mean, sitting down with a spiced rum and a Diet Coke and be able to tell stories with my partners. We should get one of my old partners.
We should. We'll do a drunken.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a
drunken tell all.
Absolutely. But not malice, nothing illegal. But if it wasn't fun, it wasn't worth doing.
Right.
And we took it seriously. We didn't take ourselves seriously, but we took our jobs really seriously. Mm-hmm. And Yeah. So, yeah.
I wanted to also, sorry, this brought up something. I just wanted to touch base on one thing that you told me that still sits with me to this day regarding you wanting to start CCJA and how you're going to be teaching. Is you said that when military, when they are out in combat, they have to ask for permission to shoot. Right. It's not, you can just do willy-nilly and do whatever you want.
Right. They follow orders.
They follow orders.
Yes.
But when you get sworn in for the police, first day,
right.
You correct. Have the right.
Yeah.
If need be too. So I think that was just such a, I never put two and two together regarding that. Like I never thought of it that way. And that was just so interesting to hear that we are wanting to teach these young adults. So when they go into the field, they know what to do and how to respond.
Right.
And maybe sometimes not saying that it's like that, but maybe that's a missing piece too, as well.
Right.
And how we can provide that education for that.
Absolutely. And so back to, I mean, that particular lesson for me was having Deputy Chief, Chris Braden was his name. And I love him. He's an incredible guy. And Mick Bradshaw, both incredible leaders with Edmonton Police during our start of our community policing. But they both of them said, you're going to be making the decision as a sworn police officer. So Calgary is an example. You get sworn in on a Bible or attest it in front of your spiritual leader. You're swearing in that you're going to uphold the laws of the country, protect life and property. You do that on day one. You have the same, a recruit who's been sworn in that day has the same powers of arrest, the same legal authority as the chief of police. It's crazy. It's incredible, actually.
Yeah, it is.
And Mick Bradshaw said, but be very careful with that because it is a careful piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the CCJA. Peter and I are building the why. In everything that we do, why do we take people's liberties away? Why do we have to handcuff people? Why do we have a criminal code, in fact? Why do we have to follow the rules of the road? Why do we have to live in this social environment, call our community? Why even have police? Why do we have structure and order? Why? And how do we take care of our communities? Those are the pieces that we've built in our curriculum and allowing our students to flourish with new ways of approaching it, because they're not blank slates. Yeah. They've had 12 full school years of all the bells and whistles going on in high schools.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get this opportunity to take on all their experience and crystallize it around the why.
Yeah.
And letting Calgary Police, the RCMP trainers, the Edmonton Police trainers, let them take care of the how. We'll teach you how to handcuff. We'll teach you how to shoot a gun, how to write a report. I mean, the most... And this came from a really cool, interesting mentor, I'd say. The most dangerous weapon and he held up his pen and he goes, you know what this is to the class? It was a police training course. He goes, this is a weapon. And depending on how you use it, can do really great stuff. But it also can do really damaging stuff. And he wasn't talking about jabbing this in someone's eye hole. He was talking about what you're writing, how you're communicating, and how important that pen can, how you speak, your tone, how you deliver this information. I mean, the number of times we walked up to the front of a house to deliver seriously bad news and to be able to, give next of kin death notifications. And it was our approach. And how important the approach was,
right?
And so that part needs to happen in college. That has to happen.
Yes.
Whatever institution you decide to go to, or whatever institution this young person who is interested in policing goes to, you're constantly trying to figure out the why, and that's what I want. And that's what I want for our students, so that when they bridge to real world, they already know. Oh, I know why we're doing this.
Yeah,
this becomes our opportunity. Simon Sinek has authored the why, but we've been talking about why for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. That, you know, CCJ is the bridge.
Yeah.
It's really the bridge. I think that makes the biggest difference.
It does. Yeah, it does. And we're going to work really hard to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get into a little bit of a nitty gritty. We got a lot of questions all the time.
Yep.
First of all, someone's asking, how can I be a canine officer?
Oh, okay. So this advice has come to me a lot. You know, I'm really interested in canine, or I'm really interested in tactical, or I'm really interested in being a Air One or a Hawks pilot. How do I do that? Well, first off, be a great police officer. Take the garbage calls. Take the calls nobody else wants. Have the reputation that you're the go-to for everything. And right from the day that, I mean, well, I really want to learn how to be a great TAC guy. Give me the techniques. Throw that out. Or I really want to understand dogs, and should I go to vet school or vet tech school or to be a dog hunter? No. You take the garbage calls.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of people. Do a really good job. And that will shine through. When you end up being a quarry for Calgary Police Canine or Edmonton Police Canine or wherever you're going to go, if that's your real passion, it'll shine through. And people will be wanting you on in their sections, mm-hmm. as opposed to you trying to sell yourself. Don't sell yourself. It's not worth it.
Your work show through.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And care about your people. Care about, I mean, I this is my belief. Although I don't 100% know, but I have had police trainers who are in canine saying, we prefer them not having any dog experience before they come to us, because then we can mold them and form them into the canine officers that we really need.
Right. They're kind of like a blank slate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think mounted unit for Calgary Police is the same way. We don't want horse people. We want to teach them horse what horse sciences are all about and how to patrol. So, yeah.
Do you have to be fit?
100%. I mean, this, you talked about stress and relieving stress and how do I manage stress at home. Being fit, although I'm not Arnold, as you can see, I'm not Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I can still run. I can still do push-ups. I can keep up with the 18-year-olds in their fitness, and fitness is so important. Several years ago, the Ontario Provincial Police said, we can teach everybody to be fit. And then 2 or 3 years later, the OPP said, hang on a second. We got to get fitness as a requirement back in. So, and at CCJ, we do fitness testing. And although I've been surprised by how seemingly unfit they look, they actually are quite successful. But it's about your heart health.
Right.
I want to make sure that your heart is not going to explode after doing an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going to die on the job in policing in this country, in Canada, chances are it's going to happen because of a heart attack or driving.
Right.
And that's the harsh reality.
Yeah.
And God forbid we lose police officers to violence. But our driving and our heart health.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being unfit is not going to serve you well. And you're not going to have longevity past your retirement years.
The people that I'll be hanging around, will they affect my policing opportunity?
Yeah. Who have you, I mean, if you're surrounding yourself, and my parents, my dad would say, you know, you're hanging out with the wrong crowd and they're going to take you down the wrong road. And that's absolutely true. Your recruiters are going to have you explain to them, why have you friended these people? Why have you befriended them? And how can you rationalize that when they're up to no good? Maybe they are. I mean, you become a part of your environment. They're even more interested in your volunteerism. Volunteering and making yourself available and your generosity of your time to your community is not giving blood. Although the International Red Cross and Canadian Red Cross needs your blood, that's not volunteering. Volunteering is actually intimate knowledge of your community, of people that you want to assist, and getting, whether at sport, culture, teaching people how to speak English, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's volunteering, and it needs to be a part of your DNA, not just something you're doing to recruitment.
Perfect. One last one.
Sure.
What kind of books do you recommend?
I love books, and I love reading. Leaders are readers. And so when it comes to the books, I like everything. And my master's research was in leadership, I can't put a leadership book down. I can't walk by. I'll never forget faculty saying, oh, this is not your life. This is not your life work, but it has turned into my life work. I love understanding complex problem solving with leadership, how leaders are how they learn and how they show care for the folks that they have working with them and for them. And so lots of leadership stuff. And my most recent book that I read was actually on the CIA and how the CIA have infiltrated governments and stuff like that. Super interesting, but that's for another podcast. So thanks. Mm-hmm. It's been really fun.
It has been. Well, thank you for everyone for listening.
Thanks, Jenny.
There will be more. We got a lot more stories that Lonnie can tell, and we're hoping to bring obviously more guests to come on.
We got to bring Peter into the conversation for sure.
Yeah, it will be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you want more information about CCJA, our criminal justice diploma, fitness testing, and our training initiatives coming up, respond lights and sirens to www.ccja.ca.